Welcome back to another episode of the Extra Features Movie Review Podcast. This is episode 277, and I think in honor of that, we should start calling it the Extra Features Podcast, just to differentiate itself from volume one.
I think you're right.
I'm Kevin.
I'm Brett Goldstein.
I'm Daniel.
I'm Doug.
I'm Turtle. No, I'm intern.
Turtle?
Turtle.
Turtle. Hi, Turtle. Nice to meet you.
Turtle meets intern.
Turtle meets intern.
So what have you guys been up to? I mean, Kevin, you went to a big con, I read online. No, I didn't know you were going.
Yes, I decided to go visit hell. I mean, sorry, yeah. Florida.
I went to Texas.
And I hid in my hotel, and then I worked at the con during the day.
So you didn't go out to any restaurants for dinner or anything?
No. I ordered in every night.
See, that's where we differ. Like, I would go to, I don't know, Olive Garden, because I love Olive Garden.
24,000 new cases of coronavirus a day in Orlando.
And you know what I'm like, Kevin? I would take my chances.
I want to go home. I don't want to be stuck in the States trying to take a bus up to Buffalo to walk across the bridge. Because that would have been the only way I could get home if I tested positive.
The Olive Garden breadsticks are not worth it. They're not worth that.
They are.
The breadsticks could double as nose swabs, maybe.
But there you go. See, there is options. And Doug, I know you're not going to talk about your big adventure this weekend, but I think you should.
Well, we were actually supposed to take a trip to Pittsburgh this weekend. I'm a big George Romero, Living Dead movies fan, so we were going to go to the Evan City Cemetery, and we were going to go to the Monroeville Mall.
Hold on one second. I've been to the Monroe Mall numerous times.
Our plans changed, though, because of the Delta variant. So instead, my family went to a break room on Friday where it's just a bunch of stuff that you get to smash, glass, old TVs, radios. They give you baseball bats, sledgehammers, tire irons, and you just go to town on these things.
They take out your aggression on it.
Exactly.
I'm in.
And then today we went to a hatchet throwing place. So we all got to throw axes and keep score. It's like darts, but with axes. And that was a hell of a lot of fun.
Just so the people at home know, we actually don't really hang out together other than this. Me and Kevin do a bit. Me and Bob do a bit. And Daniel, because of COVID, haven't seen each other. So here's my question right now, since you're all here. When this crap is, if it's ever over, which I think we're getting closer all the time, at least I hope so.
Are
we
going
to go out to dinner or something as a group so we can finally hang out? Is that the plan?
Yeah, I'm down. I'm like 5 hours away, but I mean.
You don't have a choice. You get on a bus, I expect you to be.
I mean, if we could do it.
Nothing else to do.
If we could do it in September when TIFF is on, that's probably convenient.
You're going to be convenient when I tell you it's convenient. I don't care if you get mad at me or not. You'll be there.
Okay, buddy, sorry. Kidnap me when you come to the cottage and then bring me back over there.
I'll come at your ass and get you and throw you into my car if I have to.
You're going to come at his ass?
You want to rephrase that, bro?
No, I think he said exactly what he means.
I have to hand in my 2 weeks.
Nice.
Oh, God.
So, guys, I'm really confused. This movie came out called Suicide Squad like 4 years ago or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then I turn on the TV and now it's The Suicide Squad?
Two different movies.
I'm really confused. I'm watching like the David Ayer cut finally because it didn't seem like it.
No, I think it's soft reboot, right?
This is the James Gunn cut.
Yeah.
So it's saw Guardians of the Galaxy just a DC.
It's essentially a sequel.
Yeah.
Right. The differentiates itself.
I'll jump in with the cast list here. So, The Suicide Squad, written and directed by James Gunn, starring Margot Robbie, Idris Elba, John Cena, who you can't see at all, Joel Kinnaman, Sylvester Stallone, Viola Davis, David Dastmalchian, Danielle Melchior, Michael Rooker, Jay Courtney, Peter Capaldi, Alice Braga, Pete Davidson, and Fula Borg.
Yeah, Fula Borg. Let's start there. What great casting, Fula Borg.
Yeah. He's great as a javelin. Awesome. I love him from Pitch Perfect, too.
I love Fula, period.
Have you ever seen his YouTube video where he's talking about baseball and he's confused by the premise of it? It is hysterical.
I saw him at one of the comedy club theater in Toronto.
Yeah, and how was he?
Awful.
Oh, sorry, Fula.
Because, like, the accent he has in Pitch Perfect, too, I thought that was his real accent. Then I see him in person, he's going... I saw him on the street first. He goes, "Hi, how are you?" And then he goes into, the theater, goes back into another accent. I'm going, "What?" So I sort of got that. And I watched the show and I'm going, "You're not funny."
Man of different accents.
Okay. So let's move on to Borg. Who wants to start? Connor?
Sure. I've watched this movie three times now.
Don't you have other things to watch for the next episode?
Yeah, but. It's on HBO Max. I don't have to go anywhere. I could just throw it on and just be taken away by James Gunn's craziness, and I love it.
One more thing, and then I promise to shut up.
Okay.
How many movies on your to-be-watch shelf have you purchased and never seen?
A lot. I'm not going to lie.
Over and above 50?
Above.
My point exactly. Three times for Suicide Squad.
I would say the same thing, Doug.
It's worth the investment. People like to rewatch films that they love.
Yes.
Fine, I'll get to you next.
Okay, sure.
You like to rewatch films too, so do I.
Yes, I do.
All I do.
Except Simon's right in asking Doug that question, because if he asked me that question, I would say, like, if Doug said 100, I'd have to say 500, because that's true. I just keep them all in, like, nice and pristine condition and never watch them.
If I had time, I would have watched the Suicide Squad again today. But it didn't.
No.
Okay. Doug, review, please.
I absolutely love this movie. I think the casting, first of all, I think is amazing. No other movie has ever given me Idris Elba and Peter Capaldi, two of my favorite British actors. I've never seen them together on screen in a scene, and this movie gave that to me. No matter how small that scene was, I loved seeing them together. Everybody was great in this. Joel Kinnaman, who in the first film, he didn't leave an impression on me at all. I liked him in this movie. And his, spoiler alert, his was the one fatality that actually surprised me. All the other characters who died, I kind of guessed going in that this person won't survive, this person won't survive. But Joel Kinnaman's Rick Flagg getting killed at the end, that was the one death that shocked me. I think the pacing...
Boomerang.
That
was me.
That death didn't shock me, but I thought the pacing of this film was good, with one minor exception. The Harley Quinn story, I think that kind of took away from the momentum a little bit. Up until her escape scene, I thought all of her other scenes, it just kind of slowed the story down a little bit. But anytime it was with Bloodsport and his crew, I just had a blast. That whole scene where they're sneaking into the camp and Bloodsport and Peacemaker are just killing everybody but quietly. Mm. I love that scene with the axe and Peacemaker just chop, chop, chop. And I never thought John Cena was a good actor until this movie, to be honest. I just had a blast with this. It was a lot of fun, and I would highly recommend it. I watched it three times.
And you didn't like John Cena before this because you couldn't see him before this.
But then he showed up in the Tidy Whiteys in that one scene.
Yeah.
And then you saw him.
Exactly. Very clear. I'll go next on this, just because I agree. I totally love the casting. I love that James Gunn is able to bring a bunch of his buddies in for the first bit of the film, subverts expectations with that, just the diversion. I loved what he did with Daniela Melchior as the Rat Catcher 2, who could be a bit creepy for some people if they have a rat phobia. But I thought that was great. I thought the way that the rats kind of... with the take of a TV scene, how they kind of represented the Suicide Squad. I thought that was great. I love that, and I love what James Gunn's able to do with her, kind of similarly to how he started Pom Klementieff's star power in Guardians of the Galaxy 2. So I thought that was great, and I don't know if you guys noticed her in the strip club scene.
Yep.
So that was neat. Yeah, I totally love this movie. The Harley Quinn escape scene, everything with Harley. I thought it was funny. I thought David Demolition as the polka dot guy or whatever his name was. I loved him. I just loved seeing him in everything. And I really liked how it didn't really force the hand that the first Suicide Squad, or just Suicide Squad, kind of made the mistake with forcing Cara Delevingne as the villain. So I kind of enjoyed that it was like just a big kaiju starfish. So I thought that was great. And that not really a kind of like a common goal instead of a core villain. And then it was a bit sci-fi in the third act. And I thought this movie worked a lot. And if I would have had time, I would have watched it 3 times. I saw it in IMAX, but again, I want to watch it again in regular theaters and then on HBO Max for forever, I guess. Good one.
Okay, I'll go. On my screen, I'm in the middle of between you and Doug, so I'm just a dissenting view here. I liked Harley Quinn's story arc. I thought it was the best one of all, and Idris Elba, but I felt the movie was a bit long for me, and Peacemaker's character, okay, I can't see him until now, but I wish I never saw him. But all the rest, the King Shark looked too fake. I know it's a movie, but he looked like I didn't care. But other than that, it could have been trimmed by a lot. That's my view of it.
I think it's prerequisite that superhero movies be over 2 hours.
And I didn't see it 3 times. I only saw it once, and that was enough.
I love this movie. I thought it was great. I thoroughly enjoyed Disney firing James Gunn was DC's gain. I think he went in there and they said, do whatever you want with whoever you want. And I think that James Gunn, being a fan of John Ostrander's Suicide Squad comics from the 80s and 90s, went in there and basically did an epic Suicide Squad story. I mean, there were things that were obvious about the script. Obviously, it was going to be Deadshot, but Will Smith didn't want to come back, so they adjusted it so that it's Bloodshot, or whatever the character's name was. Bloodshot, I think, and then
Bloodsport,
right? And who a great comic appearance, Superman 3, where he can materialize guns from wherever, and he shoots Superman with a kryptonite bullet, and that's what's put him in prison in the beginning of the movie. The DC Cinematic Universe version of that, and you know, it still had all the Will Smith tropes, all the daughter, single father thing. And they applied it. I thought, I agree completely about Joel Kinnaman. I could not care less about that character in the first movie. And I was so disappointed that they killed him, because to me, he's like a staple of the Suicide Squad. So to get rid of him, I was very disappointed that they did that. But, on the other hand, I did care. So that's something that Gunn achieved that Ayer could not. I was surprised at Captain Boomerang getting it so early, because Captain Boomerang really was, again, another staple of the Suicide Squad comics. So they could have just, you know, debilitated him or put him out of the action. Instead, they made sure he was dead, as well as many of those other guys. You know, interesting premise, and certainly very Amanda Waller-like, to send one team in to be the cannon fodder while the other team circumvents the whole thing and gets right in there. I loved that Capaldi's thinker looked like the comics thinker, but he was a complete reprobate. I think there's an English show that he did where he was very much like that, like just a scummy, more like a stock trader.
Well, there was a show, The Thick of It, where he was a government agent, where he went around and cursed people out.
Yeah. Well, very much that character here, like that. And then I love that the main villain was Star of the Conqueror, the Justice League's first villain. So, you know, Harry, they certainly do a great job in getting the silliness of it across. that he's a giant starfish that shoots out starfish that control people. They made him a little bit more, it made it a little bit more permanent when he, you get a starfish on your face. You don't come back from the experience. That it bonds very much like an alien facehugger. And then just destroys you. But I thought I enjoyed it. I loved it. I thought Harley Quinn was great. I think she's slightly different in every film appearance, but I thought she's Robbie's a star, and that's a great character. And I think she brings her to life every time. The confused, like, she went from madly in love with Mr. J to scorned girlfriend in Birds of Prey, and now she's kind of keeping an eye out for potential love again, but she's not going to get fooled, and she's looking for the signs of a bad relationship. And that whole sequence with the, I mean, I don't know why that character needed to exist, but I guess just for that little arc,
Milton,
where she destroys him with the birds and all that stuff. Yeah. But I liked it. I thought it was a great film overall. No complaints.
Well, I have many, so we can start.
I know, because I remember as you were watching it, you kept texting me and saying, what is this? What is this going on here?
Oh, my God, guys. This first 20 minutes, Doug, I will turn this off. Painful. That first team with that stupid muskrat thing and the stupid guy from Guardians of the Galaxy, Michael Rooker, who drives me nuts.
This one was great.
And that stupid one-armed ice cream Nathan Fillion met. That was annoying. I hated the first 20 minutes.
TDK?
I almost turned this off.
I had so much fun with that.
If you guys didn't make me review this, yeah. I might not have watched it.
I thought Nathan Fillion was in this.
I was like, what the hell is Muskrat? I just don't care.
But all names are letters.
I'm talking to Kevin. I'm like, did they kill Harley Quinn? Because I hope they did, because I can turn this off, because she's the only part I like. Mm. And then Idris Elba shows up, and I'm like, oh. Idris Elba can act. Good. Finally, some of it's amusing to me. So I'm enjoying this. And then I really didn't part when they're doing the team and Cena shows up and they're all having the meeting with Waller. I thought that was quite funny. I did think that was working for me. You guys got to remember, I'm not the James Gunn fan. I know everybody loves him. I am not a James Gunn fan. I don't mind the Guardians films. I don't love them. And I really felt this was a thing. So I'm continuing on. And then I'm like, okay. And then they go hang out with the rebels, and I'm like, I don't care. Joel Kinnaman's talking. He just puts me asleep, so I had a nap again. I fell asleep three times from trying to watch this movie. Just
really? You were watching it in the middle of the night.
I was watching it 12:30 at night both times I started it. So.
Oh, no.
But I did finish it when I was awake. I finished the last hour when I was awake. So I'm getting there, and then Margot Robbie goes, what do you think? I'm like, okay, I'm in. Margot Robbie's talking again. I can handle this. And she's banging the president. I'm like, he's dead, man. We all know that. Drops dead. Moving on. And then they start playing the song. I'm like, oh, here we go. We're going to have a Harley Quinn scene because everybody loves Harley. Like, I really need this? Okay, I can let that go. I did enjoy the last half an hour. I thought it was kind of fun. I was getting sick of her talking about the stupid javelin that the javelin guy gave her. And she didn't know what to do with it. But that stupid, quirky voice she does, that kind of works for me. John Cena is a pile of crap. I don't know what you guys are smoking. He drives me nuts. He is awful. He is stiff as a board. He looks like the same guy from the Marine, which is three images. That's about all the facial expression he gives me every movie. I'm just like, God, Idris Elba is in this movie, and Amanda Waller. God, I love these people. They can actually act. It just shows me what a good actor can do as opposed to shit actors. Ratcatcher I thought was lovely. I did enjoy that character. I didn't know anything about her. I like how they put a two at the end of her name to tell us there was a second one, the first one. And I mean, Boomerang's easily replaced with Boomerang's kid because he exists in the comics. So that's easily dealt with. Overall, I like parts of it. I didn't like parts of it. But I mean, again, I'm not a gun fan. I'm perfectly honest about that. So it seemed to me just like a Guardians film. So I graded it like a Guardians film because that's how it felt to me. But you can find that on my Twitter and Extra Features. So, to me, Suicide Squad was just okay. I didn't hate it. See, that's pretty good, right? Didn't hate it.
The sense I'm getting is that the first 20 minutes for you were like the exhibition games of an NFL season, and then you just were like,
I was watching some CFL football with the Argos playing some team I've never heard of. Oh, BC, who cares?
And then Idris Elba comes in as the regular season. I think
that's right. You got it exactly is how I felt. Because Kevin goes, oh, Simon's calling me. He must be watching something that's annoying. He's going to talk to me about it.
He's like, what is this movie? And I said, it's the Suicide Squad. It's awesome. Terrible.
I wanted to just mention something about the post-credit scene, as I don't know anything about comics. And when I was watching it in the theaters, like, they did the whole thing where Peacemaker might be alive. And then it went, this next scene where it was Atlas, like a logo of Atlas. And I thought that was going to be the next villain, even though that was just the movie logo. I was like, oh, Atlas, the god is going to be the next villain. And I was like, oh.
See, okay. That confused me too. I thought that was going to be like the opening credits for the Peacemaker TV show on HBO Max. But apparently it was just the credit logo.
It was
what
cinematic.
What did the Muskrat do, Kevin? I don't even know who this is.
The Weasel?
Weasel?
Like, useless.
He murdered 27 kids. What more do you need to know?
And Killer Shark doesn't do anything other than stand there and look pretty and stuff.
But it's sly. And I just love all the different interpretations of him from, like, the Harley Quinn show. And,
yeah,
and, like,
Ron Funches on the Harley Quinn show is the Killer Shark.
Ron Funches. I love him.
Funches is amazing on the Harley Quinn show. That is my Harley Quinn is that show. Makes me laugh so hard. And Kite Man? Who thought Kite Man could be cool?
Yeah, but I thought the surprise of Sly here was pretty good when we first start hearing him talk. I was like, ah, yay.
And I guess next up, Daniel, since I live in the 905, we can talk about Fast Night. The best transition I can think of.
Yeah, like F9 or the Fast Saga or whatever this one's called. They can never make up their mind.
It's about family.
Family. Directed by Justin Lin, written by Daniel Casey and Justin Lin, starring Vin Diesel, Michelle Rodriguez, Tyrese Gibson, Ludacris, John Cena, who we've just seen, but we can see again, Natalie Emanuel, Jordana Brewster, Sun Kang, Michael Rooker, Helen Mirren, Kurt Russell, Charlize Theron. You can't escape Michael Rooker, Simon.
The theater I saw this movie in, theater, it just ended. There was a scene, and there's no credits, there's no nothing. It ended. They just come out of the cave or whatever after being, and I thought, well, what's going on here? But anyway, this is what, the 10th movie of the franchise?
Ninth main one.
What was Hobbs and Shaw? That wasn't part of.
That's a spinoff. So it's the ninth one in the main universe.
Okay. Daniel, you're going to love this.
The 9 in the title.
Okay. Daniel, you're going to love this. I have never seen a Fast and the Furious movie up till now.
Oh, God. 9 in? 10 in? What do you mean?
You got me last time with it. You said you watched the third movie in a trilogy and you haven't even seen the second one or the first one yet. And it happened again.
You're a consistent intern.
I thought I'd tell you this before Simon did because we talked about this. But what I saw, even like when it cut off, I wasn't enjoying this movie, and there's a reason I haven't seen the first 8, because this is not my type of movie. I realize, okay, the first part where they're going across the bridge, and it's not that big of a bridge in the first place, in a car, they're driving across the bridge. The only thing left after they shoot up the bridge before Vin Diesel's car gets there is the rope or whatever that's called. And he goes across the rope and I'm going, in a car? He's really? That's not believable.
Oh, it's never, since the fifth film, it's not been believable.
This wasn't my type of movie.
This is a weird one to jump in on, not knowing the rules of the gravity.
Now you're saying I have to watch the other 8. Is that what you're saying?
Start with the fifth one.
Start with the fifth. Okay.
Because that's when it jumps the shark and becomes worldwide, global feast and stuff.
Worldwide
so.
Domination.
Yeah. Uh-huh. In Fast and Furious, world police.
Well, if I don't like the fifth one, I'm blaming you.
Okay. Did you finish the film?
The theater I saw it in cut off on the...
Were they ever in a cave? Was that when they were...
It's when they got kidnapped or whatever you call it.
Okay.
They're all sitting there and, was it John Cena was the villain?
Yeah.
Okay. They're in there with him.
Okay.
And it just cuts off after that, but there's a fight, there's a scene after that where they're they're crashing their cars or whatever, and then it just ends on me. I'm going, well, that's not good.
I'll jump on from your points, though, because this is probably the best franchise to watch at the 10th one, just because there's so much that is retconned into the franchise. Before this film, Vin Diesel never had a brother. He's only ever had a sister. Mm-hmm. And there's just like, hey, wait a second. We've lost Dwayne Johnson. We've lost Jason Statham. What if we put John Cena in? And we just make him his brother. And there's this tragic backstory where their father dies. And it's just, yeah. So this is probably a good one to jump in on, to be honest. But, cause they're all the same. If you didn't like this one, just don't bother with the other ones. But,
you just told me to watch one.
Fine. You can. I won't hold you against it if you don't. Okay. But, so to me, these movies are all the same. And at this point in the franchise, I feel like it feels like satire of itself, just with all the TikToks of the, I don't know if you guys have seen that, but just the TikToks where they're like, they mentioned something about family, and then they put Dom Toretto's head on someone. He's like, family's the most important thing. And they're funny, but once you actually watch the movie and something very similar to that happens, it feels like complete satire. And then they go to space, and it's like, I like these movies, but like at a point since the 8th one, I'm kind of just like, I'll watch it, but I'm kind of tapped out emotionally. The fifth to seven, that's it for me. And then otherwise I'll watch these, but I won't adore them, I guess. They're fine. just totally just bring that out there. Like they're okay. They defy gravity and they have some good stunts, but yeah, it's just all about family. Really.
Yeah, this was a very middle of the road Fast and Furious movie for me. I will be honest, without Statham or The Rock, my interest in the films dwindles incredibly.
Yeah.
This movie also felt very episodic to me. There was, okay, we'll start off, now we're going to go to the jungle island. Now Dom's going to go to London to see Helen Mirren. Now we're going to Scotland. It just felt very episodic. Nothing felt very cohesive to me. This was also bad John Cena acting, where I liked him in Suicide Squad. I wasn't feeling his performance in this film. And without The Rock or Statham, it just didn't do anything for me. I had fun while watching it. It was long. It was like 2.5 hours long. It didn't feel that long to me, but it also isn't something I'm looking forward to watching again.
A lot long to me.
Okay, I'm going to pick – I feel exactly the same way as Doug. I do have a little bit of few more issues. Was there a point of this? I felt like I was watching like the Fantasy Island episode where there's plot number one's over here, and then we have plot number two here, and then we have plot number three over here. And they all have celebrities in them, so you may not know who they are, but they'll tell you. And then we have the end plot, and it all comes together. And then they have a barbecue, and the movie's over. And I'm like, why? Yeah. What is the point of this movie? And why are they in space? They have cars, but they go to space. And Han didn't die. Okay, but I did see Han die. I'm really confused. Can they not kill somebody off in this franchise?
Okay, I know the rule.
Put somebody in actual peril? Because no, Dom Toretto can't lose a fight, so it can't be him. Letty comes back. The guys in space didn't die. The space station picks them up and sends them back. Like,
yeah.
And Cypher is your villain, and I don't know what she's doing because I could never figure out that whole storyline. And John Cena just figures out, oh, I got screwed, so I'm going to be buddies with my brother again who I've hated for 20 years. I don't understand this Fantasy Island episode. Can somebody – am I wrong here?
No. If you're family, you can come back to life. If you're a villain, you and Dog
have a fight right now. All right? And you guys find out Dog is my brother, but we haven't spoken for 10 years. So Dog is trying to steal something out of my house. So you guys, we all get together and stop Dog from doing it. So me and Dog comes over to my house the next day and has a barbecue?
You guys have healed the relationship. You've come over this miscommunication, and you've learned that family is the most important part.
Well, any bad guy aside from Charlize Theron becomes good in the franchise. You know, it happened with Statham. It's happened. It happened with John Cena in the same movie.
Is this the Paw Patrol movie? Everybody comes together at the end and they're buddies.
Spoiler, Simon. Pretty much. Spoilers for Paw Patrol the movie.
Like, you're gonna watch that. Like, any of our listeners are sitting there going, I'm gonna watch Paw Patrol tonight. I'm Simon Burnett, and I'm gonna watch it now. Yeah, it's not gonna happen. This movie stinks. John Cena stinks. Vin Diesel stinks. This whole franchise stinky.
A family.
Yeah, but justice for Han.
Yeah, don't care. Han's a character I like.
And Charlize Theron can also not die because she gets away on a drone. Because it's just all misdirection. Of course, because
she magically escapes. But the two guys in space live. I give up.
Misdirection.
She's Dr. Robotnik.
Kevin, did you see this?
I did see it, yes.
Okay.
It was, it's almost like, it's like the James Joyce of movies. It's just long, rambling narrative. Things happen. People change sides. I like the bits with the magnets and the cars. That was a very kind of a cool sequence when they were driving down the streets and keep turning on the magnets and things are flying in.
Wasn't that the eighth one?
What's that?
No, that was this one.
Oh, I'm sorry. I saw this a month ago. Yeah. This is the first first time I was back in the theater, so I can't remember.
That's the only part I did enjoy.
I can't say I've seen every Fast and the Furious movie, but I've seen the last few, and this is what they are. It's just... It's not even like a video game. It's just things happen, they get undone, they rehappen, people change sides, people die, but then they come back, and then
video games are more realistic.
Kevin, this is like me and you. You know, we met on Sutter Island. I didn't see you for a few years, and then we're family.
Yeah, that's right. We're family now.
Family.
Yeah. So we're gonna put the gang together and drive cars around the world.
Well, I thought we'd just meet up at the Mandarin and have some dinner with Doug. Might like the Mandarin.
I got to say, I laughed with the two guys in the car going into outer space because it was so freaking dumb. But I love the fact that the guys that put together had no idea what they were doing. And they're talking to them about everything. And the one guy goes, so you think it's going to work? He goes, no, these guys are going to be a stain on the wall or whatever. And they're like,
yeah,
we can hear it.
I forgot. That's Lucas Black and Bow Wow. They were in Tokyo Drift, if you didn't see that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, like, it's all part of the interconnected universe. My favorite was Dom Toretto sent us. Now, who the hell is Dom Toretto? And why should I care?
I will say I did like Tyrese's epiphany in this movie where he kind of broke the fourth wall and realized that maybe they're characters in a movie because they can't get hurt. I kind of like that little meta moment. Mm-hmm. And also when they're in the car in space talking about trust the physics, trust the science, especially for this franchise where physics does not exist, where you can jump a car from skyscraper to skyscraper. You could stop a tank with a motorcycle.
You can fly onto a suspension bridge, hook the thing underneath of it, and swing your car across a mountain through the air and land and live.
Yeah, so science and physics do not exist in this universe, but they're trusting it.
It's the perfect movie for the Trump era.
They listen to the
facts don't matter.
You can jump. My favorite is the guy on the car can beat the guy jumping from building to building. Catch him, no problem. How is that possible?
If anything's possible with family.
And can you explain how these magnets work? If I want some.
Magnets don't work that way.
I know.
They can suck in, but they cannot repel like that.
I know. It's kind of cool, though. So I want those magnets.
They're movie magnets.
Intern, can you get me some movie magnets, please? Where's intern? Is he in the bathroom? I don't hear any response.
Intern.
He's there. Must be getting something.
You're muted.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, while I was thinking about Kevin at the show, I was looking at brochures. So when this pandemic's over, I think I was taking a jungle cruise.
I like it. I was going to go with now that we're all family, let's take a jungle cruise.
I don't like you that much.
Oh. Jungle Cruise, directed by John Collette Serra, written by Michael Green, Glenn Ficarra, and John Rickua, starring Dwayne Johnson, Emily Blunt, Edgar Ramirez, Jack Whitehall, Jesse Plemons, and Paul Giamatti.
And this is the Princeter's turn.
My turn?
Yes.
Okay, cool. I actually like this one. I liked how it kind of had the... Oh, yes. Thank you for your applause. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I like that it had kind of the supernatural elements from Pirates of the Caribbean. I love that movie from when I was a kid, and I like how it's Disney ride, and apparently that's the formula for it. I liked Dwayne Johnson and Emily Blunt's chemistry a lot. Honestly, I thought Paul Giamatti was going to be a more major villain. I thought he was going to team up with Jesse Plemons, but I mean, I was fine that that didn't happen, even though I always loved seeing Giamatti. We got enough of him in Gunpowder Milkshake anyway, but more on that later. I like the action here. I love how Dwayne Johnson was like a scam artist on the Amazon. I thought that was interesting. I don't know if we want to spoil what happens to this character, but I don't think anyone can see that coming, but I thought that was interesting.
I didn't see it.
Yeah, just how he's been on the river for that many years. I thought that was cool. I like Jesse Plemons, even though I thought the most unbelievable thing about this was a U-boat in the Amazon, even though that was kind of visually interesting. I just the way like it looks in the Amazon, it almost doesn't work. So I thought that was kind of funny that I thought that was the most unbelievable thing. But as an adventure, I really like this one. It has good visuals, pretty good pacing, some good dad jokes from Dwayne Johnson. Because he's had so long to perfect them, I thought they were funny. It's a feel-good movie, good summer fun. I wish I would have saw this in a theater first. So if I want to watch it again, I might try to catch it before it's at the theaters. Because this is one of those movies I wouldn't mind paying for. Yeah.
Wouldn't mind paying for it? So how did you see it if you didn't pay for it?
I very, very legally purchased it on Disney Plus.
Oh, $30, good. $35? I don't know how much it cost me. You got the bill. I don't care. I just watched your copy.
So, off the record, I didn't buy it.
Yeah, I'm not reading this out. So I have other.
Yeah, my aunt bought it.
I just borrowed theirs. So no, I was watching this film and partway through, I'm like, wow, this feels like Indiana Jones. I'm like done, and I'm done. It's going right through my head because I was like an 11-year-old. I think I saw my 11-year-old birthday. I saw Indiana Jones. Was he 81? 10-year-old. I was watching Indiana Jones in theater. So I'm sitting there, and then at one point I'm like, wow, this is just Pirates of the Caribbean. And I really, you know what? I like pirates, and I like Indiana Jones, and I like The Rock, and he was fun. And I like Emily Blunt, and I had a good time. I thought Paul Giamatti was a little wasted because he didn't have a lot to do. But that was okay for me, too. I had so much fun during this. It's what I wanted from a rock movie. It had some adventure, had some fun. Emily Blunt's brother could have gone out the window about 20 minutes in, and I think would have been happier with him because I thought he was kind of useless. I liked the villains, though. I thought the villains really did make the film. When they showed up, Jesse Plemons as that German submarine captain was making me laugh so hard. I thought he was perfect for that role. I thought they played that well. I mean, some people may think he's a little cartoonish, but I'm like, the whole movie's cartoonish. It's a Jungle Cruise. It doesn't really make a lot of sense. But parts of this I really like. I thought the ending, a little cheesy, but I'll take it because I would like a part two. Like, I did have a good enough time watching this. I thought the special effects looked really good. I thought that nothing really stood out. Obviously, the guys weren't a snake guy or a bee guy, but I like that. I thought the ending was kind of twisted, which would happen to the villains, but like, people find that out for themselves. And I got to say, I enjoyed the Jungle Cruise. Please.
Yay.
Shocked.
I applaud you this time.
Hey.
You didn't like Suicide Squad. Interesting.
That's because it didn't have a Jungle Cruise in it.
That was crap.
Oh.
Well, speaking of Suicide Squad, did you know that Jesse Plemons' character was actually a real person?
Oh, Duke Ferdinand or whatever?
Prince Joaquin or something like that. And actually what happened to that person in real life, his father abdicated the throne. And then since he was a prince, he actually committed suicide because he was now a commoner.
Ooh. Oh.
So.
Okay, I see why you said now, speaking of Suicide Squad.
Yes.
I got the connection.
I like it. Thank you for that history.
Yes, you're welcome. I had an okay time with this movie. It wasn't great. It wasn't awful. Simon was saying he got Indiana Jones and Pirates of the Caribbean. I was getting African Queen vibes off of this movie.
Okay.
And it really just made me want to go back and watch African Queen again with Bogart and Hepburn. But yeah, overall, it was fun. It was fine. It was a good adventure film in the jungle, but it's not one I'm itching to see again.
I agree with you guys in that it was very derivative. Not just of films like Indiana Jones, but also films like, the Kathleen Turner, Jewel of the Nile.
Oh, yeah.
Type of thing. But also The Mummy. You know,
mm-hmm.
You had the brilliant woman who wants to be an explorer, and she has a goofy brother. Great. So they were lifted from The Mummy. And, it was a nice little twist with what Dwayne Johnson was. Mm-hmm. But I liked the character. I thought, Dwayne Johnson's always likable. He's a charming guy. And I think that this was a great character for him. And I thought there was a great chemistry between him and Emily Blunt throughout the whole film. I thought that the movie really hinges on us liking the two of them and understanding that they had this kind of adversarial relationship that just becomes like a stronger friendship and perhaps romantic, but it was goofy. There were bits of Pirates of the Caribbean in there. A lot of that, even in Lord of the Rings in certain parts of it, I found with tribes and things being not what they were and stuff like that. But overall, like, I didn't expect much from this, so I was entertained.
Kevin, is this kind of like me and you? I entertain you?
Well, that's a stretch, but,
I thought it was me that entertained you, Simon.
No, I make you dance, monkey.
Nice. I was just thinking that. Do a little dance. We're on the same in the same wavelength. So I really am glad of like how big of a star Dwayne Johnson is, because I've loved him since like Walking Tall and just since watching him as a kid. And then he went through that kind of from 2005 to 2010 doing like movies like Race to Witch Mountain and all of those. And now he's just doing big movies like this. Makes me happy.
I think he had to find himself. Let's give him honest. Like, he was a wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
And he sort of became an actor, and he's like, okay, I want to do this. But, I think he had young kids, didn't he? Isn't he on his second kid? I could be wrong.
Maybe.
I think he wanted to be that kid actor. Like, he did Game Plan. He did Escape to Witch Mountain.
Yeah.
He did Journey to the Center of the Earth 2. Like, with movies.
Very.
Yes.
But he started out like every other wrestler to film and did action, like The Rundown and Walking Tall. The remake.
For that. I think Scorpion King. I have a personality.
Right, that's his first one.
I can be funny. Mm-hmm. So he went that way. And now he's got it. I can do action comedy. And I think it works for his personality to do action comedy because we like him. He's funny. We think fun to watch. He seems like a nice guy.
Oh, for sure.
You know, when you watch Steven Seagal movies, like, he's a dick. He looks like a dick, he acts like a dick, and he is a dick. And The Rock always seems nice. Everything I read about The Rock says nice. Everything in interviews, he's nice. So we tend to like him. And that's the thing with social media now. You get to actually sometimes know the person a little bit.
Yeah.
And John Cena, I can't see his acting, so that's probably why I don't like him.
Well, don't tell Vin Diesel and Tyrese Gibson that The Rock is a good guy. They'll disagree.
Well, yeah, they're telling, Tyrese Gibson needs his money train. Like, that's why he's on the Fast 9 train, because it's cash. He has not made anything else that anybody's ever seen but me. Mm. And maybe Doug, on his shelf, and he'll watch in 25 years.
Probably.
Yeah, that's
about
right.
So, did everybody get to talk? I apologize for the listeners. No. I had to go get a drink. So, Bob's up?
Yeah.
I have to agree with whoever. Like, I think Daniel, Kevin and Simon liked it. I have to agree with all that. And I didn't connect the parts about until now. the Harry Potter, Indiana Jones, and the African Queen and Pirates. I didn't connect that till now, and I'm going, oh yeah, but I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed his Dwayne Johnson's character. Even though the jokes were bad, I still, like, I was in the theater with other people, but they were all laughing at the joke. Some of them I was going, oh. But I really enjoyed the movie because the chemistry between the two, as you said, Daniel, between Emily Blunt and Dwayne Johnson was really good. And the Mummy, yes, you're right. I did think of the Mummy after it as well, so, but I hadn't connected it till now. But all in all, I would recommend this movie as well. I think I did see it.
And you'll buy it as soon as it hits Walmart.
So of course, I'll buy it.
I know that.
Or it might hit Sunrise. If it hits Sunrise, I'll buy it there.
So hold on. Sunrise, just so Bob knows, Doug knows, is a local chain for us, and I think they're only available in malls now. I could be wrong.
They're in Scarborough Town Center. It used to be in Fairview, but they're out of Fairview now.
So it's like an FYI. Is that right? Do I have the right
FYE?
Name?
FYE.
FYE. We have one of those in Toronto now. They just opened one. Which I have not been downtown to FYE. Check it out, but I will have one. No. Yeah, they have one in the Eaton Center. No. So basically, that's our version of FYE.
Okay.
Just so you
or
know.
Or could have been an HMV like years ago.
You know, HMV's gone now. Do we have any left?
Nope.
I thought that's what Sunrise Records took over.
I thought so too, because they took over some of their locations.
They took over something else too. I think they bought somebody else. It doesn't matter. So we're getting off track. So I got a question. The Fast Nine guys went up to space.
I'm not buying that. Movie.
When they went to that place, the thing, was that where they played the Space Jam game? Is that where they actually went out?
All right, ready for the jam. Space Jam. New Legacy, directed by Malcolm D. Lee, with a screenplay by A Writer's Room, starring LeBron James, Don Cheadle, Chris Davis, Sinequa, Martin Green, Cedric Cho, Zendaya, Clay Thompson, and Jeff Bergman and Eric Bauza, who voiced the Looney Tunes. Well, that's just disrespectful to Jeff and Eric.
Kevin, right. Do you know them?
No, I do not.
Then shut up. Kevin, you're up.
Oh, God.
Dismissive,
Space
isn't
Space Jam, A New Legacy.
Newest Legacy, yes.
Well, I mean, I didn't mind the old Space Jam, but this didn't really do anything for me. In fact, the only thing it really did was I enjoyed the cameos in the background of the games. Because, you know, if you're going to have a basketball game for the sake of the universe or whatever it is they're fighting over, you know, you want to have the Looney Tunes playing on your team as opposed to, like, Superman or the Iron Giant or all those characters that we're watching in the background. That made a lot of sense. You know, I mean, I like the Looney Tunes. They were okay in this movie. It's no Tom and Jerry, so that means that it's watchable. Overall, you know, it was what it was. It was another Space Jam. We can do it again in 10 years.
Let's not. Please stop.
I'm sure we can. We'll just find another superstar basketball player. And
if there is one.
Maybe we'll find one who's likable this time.
Yeah, LeBron James cannot act. Man, that guy is stiff.
Yeah.
Absolutely stiff.
Mm-hmm.
He should go hang out with John Cena on his show. I'm sure it could be stiff one and stiff two.
They could be the new 48 Hours.
Oh, they could be. Yes, Bob.
No, I can't ask this question until after. It's okay. Ooh. Keep going.
It's one of those.
I got
nothing. It's related to like the What If series, but I'll wait.
Okay.
It's not related to Space Jam.
What if it was good?
Yeah.
That's what I would have said, but that wasn't what I was putting. But yeah, since you're saying it, what if it was good? It was
in a different timeline.
Yeah. That's right.
Okay. I watched this with my daughter. I figured she doesn't know Looney Tunes.
Your poor daughter.
Maybe it's my bad, but she doesn't know any of the stuff. So I watched it with her the first half an hour, and I paused it because she went to get a drink or something. I said, "Do you know who any of these characters are?" She's like, "Nope." I said, "Are you enjoying this?" She's like, "Nope." Four out of ten. I'm like, I love this kid.
It's like the Tom and Jerry movie. Who are we making these movies for? We're making them for us, for our generation, the last ones that used to remember watching Looney Tunes on television.
But that's fine. But a Looney Tunes movie, for the sake of, and I mean, the cameras in the back did nothing for them. Like, oh, there's more people just distracting it. What I liked about this movie, which very little, was the Looney Tunes.
You haven't subjected your daughter to the Looney Tunes TV show?
When, it's not on TV.
I have it on DVD.
Well, you know it to me.
Of course I will.
Okay, well, then I'll show it to you. But what I'm saying is, they missed the point of this movie. I want Looney Tune action. So I did get that in the last 15, 20 minutes, probably, I would say, when they're doing things the Looney Tunes would do. Like, give me Looney Tunes. I don't care about The Matrix. I don't want to see the Looney Tunes in Road Warrior. I don't want to see the Looney Tunes in Casablanca. I mean, the Marvin Martian scene was fantastic, but I love Marvin Martian. Give me that stuff. Get kids to watch that stuff. Like, as a parent, I want my kid to be happy and amused. I don't think this is amusing them because it's boring. Like, I get the whole thing with Don Cheadle being the algorithm, like a real good joke. I'm like, I get that. I get they introduced the kid to get kidnapped. But he doesn't do anything other than make a new thing and do the programming thing. But, I mean, do more of that with the Looney Tunes. Make a Looney Tunes person to visit him. Give me Gossamer. I think Gossamer is the big featherweight name. The big red guy. I love him. But, I mean, give me that stuff. I don't care who the villain is. Make up a new villain, the Looney Tunes. It's going to destroy the universe. I don't care. Give me something to bugs to work off of. Other than going, hey, Doc, I think we need to do our tricks. And that's the big bugs line, the whole movie. Like, whoop-de-doo, we all knew that at the beginning. It's like, this is basically, they watched the Harlem Globetrotters and beat Gilligan's Island. When the robots show up and they're going to kill all the Gilligan's Island people and the Harlem Globetrotters, they don't beat them. And the only way the Harlem Globetrotters beat them is doing their tricks and Gilligan tells them. They ripped that off this storyline. That's all I have to say. This movie's crap.
I'll jump in. I think this was made for my generation, for people who loved the first Space Jam. And I still didn't like Space Jam A New Legacy. At least in the first one, it's because the Looney Tunes are like the main characters who are threatened by someone else and they go find Michael Jordan. Here, the algorithm, fucking stupid name, just sends LeBron James to the Looney Tunes. And yeah, I think that's the problem. I thought the whole bit with Don Cheadle trying to win over LeBron James' son, because there's that whole trophy. Ooh, I want to go to video game camp. I like video games. I don't like basketball. I think that's fine, but I thought it was very convoluted how he tries to turn the son against LeBron James, and I just didn't like that part. The only part I ever laughed was when they were recruiting the Looney Tunes, and there's that Austin Powers bit with Elmer Fudd. I thought that was really funny. Like that 3-minute stretch was the best part of the movie for me. I don't think we needed an hour basketball game because they only score, what, probably 20 baskets throughout the whole thing and just doesn't feel Looney Tunes. It's just dumb. And it's just like, hey, look at our intellectual property. Look, there's Iron Giant. There's Pennywise. There's Mystery Inc. We have everybody with a Harry Potter in bad costumes. It's just – and the background is so crowded. I don't need all that stuff. Just – bring them for 15 minutes and then have them all screw off. It just distracts, I find. Condense the basketball game to 30 minutes, maybe it's a bit better, because this doesn't need to be 2 hours at all. And I think that's a big issue, and it's just, I'd rather rewatch Ready Player One, and the only reason you would rewatch this is to see all the background characters, and it's not good enough to ever sit through again. I just, yeah, disappointing. And it's a lot of the same problems I had with Scoob.
There was one segment I thought that was quite amusing when it looked like they were bringing in Michael Jordan.
Oh, that was good. That was actually a good joke.
Then Michael B. Jordan shows up.
I found him. I found Michael Jordan.
I was getting popcorn.
Yeah. That was amusing.
This movie made me laugh 3 times, but that's it. In chronological order, it was when the beginning, when the son says ball and then gets smacked in the face with the basketball.
One.
That made me laugh. I also laughed at Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote in Road Warrior.
Yeah.
For some reason, that just worked for me. And then the last thing that made me laugh was the Michael B. Jordan part.
I like that you're counting along, Bob.
I'm going to turn off the camera from now on.
I'm just screwing with you.
But no, this movie didn't need to exist, and I question its choices sometimes. Why did they use so much R-rated material for a kid's film? They had Game of Thrones. They had The Matrix. They had Road Warrior. They also had Casablanca, which to kids today, do they even know what Casablanca is?
That's the question, Doug. Do your kids know what Casablanca is?
Yes, because I'm their dad, so they would know.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
They know Casablanca. They know Citizen Kane.
Hey, big question. Daniel, have you watched Casablanca?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I have.
You would be the next guest. Sorry.
No, but I don't see how those resonate with child audiences today. And then in the audience of the game, they had Pennywise the Clown, another R-rated movie. They had the nuns from Ken Burns' The Devils in the crowd.
There's a movie, I think we did that on the show, but I mean...
The Devils? Yeah.
I don't get their choices. It didn't work for me. And the biggest sin, it did not have a killer song like the first movie did. There was no Space Jam song.
True.
Well, where was Will Smith? Was he busy?
He's not a basketball player. He's not an NBA star.
I know, but he couldn't even make a song. Like, he seems to do the same song.
Oh, I forgot. I forgot he did the first song. Okay.
I think it was Will Smith, wasn't it?
I don't know. I thought it was R. Kelly because
he can't have R. Kelly. No, he's very busy.
Oh yeah, very busy.
Kelly's a little busy this week.
Yeah, I can't remember who did the Space Jam theme.
And do we only have one more person to speak?
I have to go with actually Daniel. How old are you?
I'm 26.
Okay, you said the first Space Jam movie was made for you. Your generation?
Yeah, I mean, it came out in what? I mean, when I was I would have been five or six when I saw it. It came out in what, 98, 97?
21 years ago, I guess. I like the first Space Jam. This one, not so much, for the very reasons you said, but, quiet.
Okay.
I lost track. Thank you, Kat.
You're welcome.
You're right. Like, there was too much going on in the background, and I was actually looking. Okay, what's going on here? What? And I didn't care about the basketball game at the time. I thought, okay, but I liked where they went to different Earths or whatever it was, and they saw Superman, they saw Batman, they saw Wonder Woman. I'm going, well, I like this. And then as Doug said, when he got hit with the basketball, I laughed at that. A couple of times. But I didn't enjoy the movie as a whole. Like, it just didn't do anything for me as the first one did. That's it.
Original theme song is by Quad City DJs.
Oh, let's bring them back because I don't think they're doing anything exciting. They could.
I would like to correct myself. I think I said Ken Burns, The Devils. Ken Burns makes documentaries.
I know who you meant.
It's Ken Russell, the director.
Yes. Yeah, when you know when you're watching a Ken Russell film.
Yes.
The Devils of Blue Dog.
So I went to the Space Jam. I told you guys I had some fun. The game was kind of fun. I got to hang out with Bugs at the after party, and they serve gunpowder milkshake, so it's kind of cool.
Pretty good. Gunpowder milkshake. Whoa, whoa. Written and that was pretty good. Pretty good transition. Written and directed by Naval Papushadu and co-written by Ehud Lasky. Yeah, so they write and direct. Sorry, I'm going to do that again. Gunpowder Milkshake, written and directed by Naval Papushadu and co-written by Ehud Lasky, starring Karen Gillan, Lena Headey, Carl Gugino, Chloe Coleman, Michelle Yeoh, Angela Bassett, Paul Giamatti, and Ralph Ineson as the villain.
It seems like Paul Giamatti suddenly found out he had need to work again.
I think so. Just little bit roles. Always nice to see him.
He was in Jungle Cruise.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. He's working again. I'm going to throw this to Doug because I know Doug loves the film and he'll speak passionately about it.
Maybe not that passionately, but I will say I have a major crush on just about every actor in this movie except for the 12-year-old girl. That's
okay.
But including Paul Giamatti. I will say I do have a crush on Paul Giamatti. But,
does your wife know about this?
Yeah.
She's
okay with it.
Even Ralph Ineson?
She's hoping they'll come by and take you out occasionally.
Exactly. No, I had fun with this movie. I've been a fan of Karen Gillan since her days on Doctor Who. So I like seeing somebody I saw originally on TV get bigger and better roles in movies. So to see her take the lead in this, that was pretty cool to me. I think she's actually a pretty good actress. Her accent work in this film is actually very good. And she's actually really good at the action choreography and stunts. The biggest sin for me is that Michelle Yeoh didn't really kick anybody or use her martial arts skills that much. But I still had a lot of fun with all the choreographed violence and action scenes. I had a blast with this. I kind of hope that they do make a sequel. I'd like to see more of these characters.
You think there's going to be a sequel, though?
I hope so.
Okay. Well, Doug didn't even touch on the good stuff.
What?
This is fun.
Yeah.
This is just pure pulp fun. I really like most of this film.
Uh-oh.
I like guns, guns, and more guns, and fun. And it works on so many levels for me, this film. I mean, does it have depth? Nope. No depth at all, but I didn't care because I was having too much fun. I literally just like watching them kill people, shoot people, and be chased down. I literally had fun with this film. I want to know. I saved it for Doug because I was going to put it on my earlier list, but I knew Doug would put it on his, so I wanted him to have a chance to do so. Yeah, it's nice seeing these people. Everybody had something to do, which is why I really liked it.
Speaking of that, I thought this movie was actually kind of brave in one aspect. It took the main character out of the final fight altogether.
Yes.
She picks up the kid, walks out of the diner, and lets everybody – we already know she's a badass. She doesn't need to prove herself anymore. Just let everybody else take care of it. I thought that was a really brave choice for the film.
I agree. Sure. I think we will see another film in this universe. I think it allows itself to be world building. But I also felt wanted allowed itself to have universe building, and that didn't seem to give us a sequel, and they sort of just left it. I mean, I felt this was kind of like Wanted at times. But the Angela Jolie character, obviously, curved bullets and stuff, obviously a little bit different, but very similar at times. But that's fine. I like this kind of movie. I like this pulpy kind of movie. I could have seen Michael Caine playing the Paul Giamatti character 20 years ago without an issue because he would have fit further than. But no, I think this is a fun film. And I think we get hammered a bit with the women empowerment with it, which is fine. I don't care. They get paled with male empowerment all the time. So. If I don't like it, I can turn it off. But I didn't want it. I love Charlie Giacuto. I mean, we've done enough for films on the show because Kevin's got a fetish for
what?
You heard me.
For what?
Carlo Giugino.
Giugino, you love her.
Sure. There's a lot to love there.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean,
Angela Bassett, I love since Critters. I think Critters 2. I think she's in Critters 2 or Critters 1. And I think she's just a great actress and very underutilized and everything. So it's just fun to see her. I'm glad they gave everybody a lead. He does her job.
Yeah.
And that's about it. Moving over to Daniel.
Yeah, I love the...
You want to go, Bob?
No, Daniel can go.
Okay.
I agree. I like the finale a lot. I kind of wanted to... Because it's slow motion, so I kind of wanted to see them. I kind of wanted to see how that would have been staged just like after that. They just would have showed like 20 seconds. Seconds of it in real time just to see all that carnage happen and just a short amount of time, I guess. Anyway, I really like this. I like the world building. I thought the library worked. I thought the diner worked. I like the world building in terms of, cause it's just kind of like John Wick with the hotel. So obviously there's just maybe a little derivative in ways, but I thought it was very original. I like Karen Gillan's character. I like how she saw herself, she didn't want Chloe Coleman's character to end up like her with her mom leaving her. So I was like, I like the morals in that way kind of thing. And I like Chloe Coleman in My Spy. So I was kind of glad to see her here. I think she's a good child actress.
I was surprised I saw her and I thought, I know this. And then I looked her up and I go, yep.
My Spy. Yeah. And I liked, I agree. I love the three aunts. I love Carla But Gino, I think I probably saw her for the first time in Spy Kids, and I've loved her ever since. I love the action. I thought the stunt choreography was good, even though I thought, like, in the bowling alley with just all of the, it's kind of more silhouette-y, and I thought it was more obvious than usual that they were pulling the kicks, to be honest. But I thought it was still good choreography either way. I love the gun action, and I love most of this, actually. I really enjoyed it. Good characters, good action, good world building with the firm and Ralph Ineson. Yeah, just good movie. Good movie. I would like to see this in theaters, like most of the other movies on this podcast, except for Space Jam.
I gotta agree with you because, like, at first, you know how this type of movie is not my thing, but. And I saw the title, and I looked it up, and I'm going, I'm not going to like this. But then I started watching it, and I was surprised I liked it so much because I liked the choreography, the different ways of that they killed with people, and then Karen Gillian's character had Chloe tape up her gun to the hand because she lost the feeling in her hand. I'm going, this is interesting. And I really enjoyed it from start to finish. I was surprised at how much I enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. I forgot Michael Smiley was in this. That was a doctor at the hospital.
Oh, yeah.
I like him.
Well, now I feel bad because, like, I didn't love this. I thought it was okay. I didn't hate it. I thought it was very derivative. It was very John Wick.
Yeah.
It was very, parts of it reminded me of things like True Romance and action films from the 90s. Except so this is it's always all or nothing, right? It's either it's like a bunch of guys or a bunch of women. It's never people. So in this case, it was like, Let's recast all the male parts in like a John Wick and put in all female characters and make it about mothers and daughters and sisters and things like that and the relationships there. What would a female led action movie be like? It would still be kick ass, but you know, and Paul Giamatti is the sweaty fat guy, you know, who's in charge.
It's almost like the same character you played in Rock of Ages, a similar type.
Or the Jungle Cruise.
Or the Jungle Cruise. Murder.
Yeah, it's or Planet of the Apes.
Or Planet of the Apes.
Just any role he plays, maybe.
Pretty much, yeah. He played Paul Giamatti, basically. Am I begging to see a sequel? No. I thought it was okay. Like, I wasted my time. I watched it. I didn't feel like I really wasted it. It was just sort of happened and... there were better films I did see that week, so. But it was very stylish, and they killed Carla Gugino, which just, like, bothered me.
Mm. So. That's probably why you didn't like it.
That may be.
But her on the minigun. That's fair. Her on the minigun was awesome.
Yeah.
It was good.
Mm-hmm.
You know what happened to me the other day, Doug?
What?
It was so hot. My glasses.
How hot was it? Edit that out.
Wait, was that
Johnny Carson reference? I don't think Simon got it just then. Or that either that or he hated that reference.
Fine.
Fine.
Now, wait.
No better than
that. I think I missed the part. You said the fog, right?
His glasses got foggy.
I totally missed the... I was like, my glasses got, and then it got cut off. Okay.
And this is the original.
I was going to go with, hey, Simon, could I get a stomach pounder and a Coke?
No.
No. Oh, you guys remember that? That's my new catchphrase. It's the fog. Directed by, I don't even know what a stomach pounder is, but that's okay.
I don't want to know.
Ah, is it? Okay. I thought it was sounds like a sloppy Joe.
Could be a stomach pounder. I thought it was a drink, but I don't know. Maybe Doug. I've never heard this.
What's I thought it was a drink, too.
Yeah, I'm looking it up. No, you keep talking.
The Fog, directed by John Carpenter, written by Carpenter and Deborah Hill, starring Adrian Barbeau, Jamie Lee Curtis, John Houseman, Janet Leigh, and Hal Holbrook.
Kevin.
Yes, sir.
It's been so long, I really have no whatever for this movie. So I'm going to skip.
That's fair.
You know.
No love for it?
Well, I mean, how scary can fog be? Really, but there's something in the fog, right? That's
it's on a centennial and
pirate ghosts.
Yes. Yes. So very Jungle Cruise. Uh-huh. Go ahead. Find it, Simon.
I did. There's nothing. He just made it up as a joke. But most people think it's a drink. Same thing I do.
Oh, okay. Okay, sounds good.
There you go. Kevin hasn't seen the fog. Okay, I'll start.
Oh, I've seen it. I have no love for it. I have no memory of it.
So yeah, I could see why. The first half an hour, I fell asleep, Doug. Mm-hmm. I was sitting there going, okay, this is going nowhere. And then the Janet Leigh character I thought was useless. Absolutely painfully boring. And then the only character I did like the Adrian Barbeau character. But I felt this movie took too long to get where it was going. Like, it was setting up, setting up, setting up. I did like the relationship with Barbeau with that guy on the radio. I kept calling in. I liked him. I liked that relationship. But then when her kid goes, somebody please help my kid, I'm like, I just don't care. Can they just kill this kid off? It just felt like a really bad 80s direct-to-video for me. I'm sorry, Doug. I tried hard to like this. I really did. I have no issues
with it. Your wrong opinion.
I'm sure I
have. That didn't matter.
It was the pacing. I was too slow for me, and I thought the payoff in the end wasn't enough for me. I didn't think it did what I want. I thought maybe something would come out of the fog, maybe a little bit more action with the ghosts, I think they are. Really not sure exactly what they were. They could be ghosts.
They're ghosts.
I wanted more from this film. I did. I sat down and watched when I was awake for Doug. I was looking forward to this. A couple more John Carpenters. I think I've seen them all. Stripper of the Rainbow is actually this week because I haven't seen that one.
That's actually Wes Craven.
Oh, this is Wes Craven, or is that one is?
Serpent of the Rainbow is Wes Craven.
Okay, it's a Wes Craven film I need to watch. I tried hard. It did nothing for me. I kind of feel like Kevin, I kind of feel like I forgot it right after I watched it, other than Barbeau, who I thought was very standout-ish. But everybody else, I just did nothing for me. I'm sorry. Nothing this film did for me. I just, when I finished it.
Also, sorry, I'll just jump in that. I looked up Stomach Pounder and I found that in one of the Halloween sequels, a Stomach Pounder is a thick drink made of mixed ingredients like peanut butter and various other things that look like a milkshake.
So we can make you one then, Daniel.
Yeah.
Sounds good. I will.
Okay. Next time when we all get for dinner, we'll all have Stomach Pounders.
Yeah, and I'll invite one bonus guy to dinner too.
Okay. Cool. I like this movie a lot. I thought, while some people might fall asleep at the first 25 minutes, I thought it was just masterclass in suspense and just with the, it opens with the ghost story for 5 minutes, sets the tone. The rules are set with that they can come at 1 a.m. between 12 a.m. and 1 a.m. on that first night. And then even though it kind of throws out the rules because it feels like they're there all night from 6 o'clock on the actual centennial. But I thought it was very good to set the tone for the first 25 minutes. I can agree that it's pretty slow at times, but I was happy to accept that it was more that the budget for the fog machines were much bigger than any gore. And I thought it was a good screenplay. I can totally agree that it's slowly paced. But I thought Adrian Barbeau and the voice that she does for the radio, I wish I could just do like that soft kind of voice, just like how she turns it on whenever she's on the air and then she's flirting with Dan or whatever. So I thought that was interesting. I thought that chemistry was interesting. I thought it was kind of weird that Jamie Lee Curtis was a drifter trying to get to Vancouver. She's like a hitchhiker and then she's like, Nick, I'll get in bed with you. We almost died in that car because the glass shattered. So I thought that was a
little surprised by that one.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of strange, but I thought the core storylines kind of went together well, and it's only 90 minutes, so it's over pretty quick. But I thought it was a good screenplay, and I thought it just shows what John Carpenter can do with suspense and a lot of fog. So I thought it was good. Glad I finally watched it.
I watched it yesterday, so it was really fresh in my mind. It's the first time I've ever seen it. What? Yes, fresh. Okay. And it was a little slow at times, but like there were certain scenes I liked where like Jamie Lee Curtis was sitting with Nick, I guess, and in the boat and the body falls out of the locker, and I'm going, like, that was a bit, I never saw that coming, but the suspense was there, and a little bit of the fog rolling in was a bit, they could have cut it a bit off, and when he gets off, when the dead guy gets up off the table, I'm going, okay, I didn't see that coming. I'm not sure how to feel about it. Like I enjoyed it for not having seen it in years, but it's a little, the pacing was slow, as you said. So, but I'm glad I saw it finally.
Hold on. You said finally. So were you waiting to see this? Like, was this something?
It's from 1980. It's 40 years old. Yesterday was the first time in 40 years I've seen it.
No.
I believe I said that when I first started talking.
I know, but I was listening. I just meant, do you have a list of films you haven't seen?
What?
Was this on your list of
two? No, it wasn't.
I mean,
no.
Doug has one, I'm sure. No, I know Daniel does.
It's not on my list of movies I have to see, but I'm glad I saw it. I don't have a list like that.
Oh, I do. Stripper in the Rainbow is one of them, so that's why it's this week's movie to watch.
It's Stripper in the Rainbow?
Yeah, Stripper in the Rainbow, actually, starring your mom.
Ah, okay.
I have a list like this. I see a movie in Walmart for $5. I'm like, this looks
good. Oh, yeah. Simon hasn't seen it. Yeah, we'll send it to his ass. He'll watch. Which is
there's about 10 of them that you'll be seeing.
Yeah, wait, I'll add to the other 50 in my pile. I think it's Doug.
Yeah, I will be honest. I chose this film because it is my wife's all-time favorite film.
Hold on. Cool.
Yes.
Your wife is making an appearance on the show?
No, she's not going to be on. Oh. But I did interview her as to why she loves this movie.
Okay, let's hear it.
Okay, first of all, she's a huge Carpenter fan. I think the first horror movie she remembers seeing is Halloween. So she feels that this is like an underrated Carpenter film. And she kind of champions it because Deborah Hill wrote it, co-wrote it with him. She's a big fan of Deborah Hill. She likes the fact that it's the first time Jamie Lee Curtis and Janet Leigh are in a film together. My wife also loves ghost stories. And this,
I knew that.
This ghost story has definite setup rules. It has the backstory of the town killing the I guess they're pirates with leprosy. So there's that whole thing, and then the revenge. It's all set up very well, with the priest in the church finding the cross. She loves everything about that, the backstory, the creepiness with the ghosts. The only thing she doesn't like is the little kid. She finds him annoying with his Mrs. Colbert. But everything else about the movie, she just adores. And I get it. I think the visuals that Carpenter sets up are incredible. I love the ending in the church where you actually see the ghosts. I love when Hal Holbrook is holding the cross and the main ghost comes up and holds the cross too and it starts to glow. I think Carpenter does some really spectacular work.
Doesn't Hal Holbrook start to sizzle or something like that?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't love this movie as much as my wife does. I have my own personal underrated Carpenter favorites. In the Mouth of Madness is mine. But I do get where she comes from with the love of this film.
Okay, cool. So I will say that when Janet Leigh first gets to the church and Holbrook totally comes from the darkness, I thought that was great. How he just shows up. I was like, oh, gosh, that made me jump.
I'm going to do a little switcheroo here because I just found my ace and it was in the hole.
Okay. An Ace in the Hole, directed by Billy Wilder, written by Walter Newman, Lester Samuels, Billy Wilder, starring Kirk Douglas, Jan Sterling, Robert Arthur, Porter Hall, Frank Caddy, Richard Benedict, and Ray Teal.
in turn.
I was going to look up something before I said anything, but no. Now you don't give me the chance. Thank you. I didn't start out liking this film. It just, like, the whole thing was slow to me, and the fact that he's in there talking to the guy that's dying, I'm not a Kirk Douglas fan to begin with. But I just, it moved a little slow for me. Which is surprising for me because I usually like slower films. It just took too long to get to where it was heading. And I wouldn't recommend it, but I saw it on IMDb that, this was one of Billy Wilder's, they're giving it an 8.1. I just didn't see that. Like, I'd give it a 5 or something, but, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know. See what everybody else thinks.
Calvin. There's no right or wrong here.
Yes, there is. It's me.
So, as I was traveling, I did not have time to seek a copy of this movie. I did watch the trailer and thought to myself, "Wow, that's a great appearance by Mr. Horse in the lead role." I don't know if you're a Ren and Stimpy fan, but Mr. Horse, you know, gonna wash the platinum right out of your hair. You know, like lots of great Kirk Douglas girding the. I'm gonna kick it out on you. You know, little things like it hits you in the gut. You know, like lots of great lines in the trailer. So I'll give it something I'll have to seek out in the future because Kirk, I love Kirk.
I know Doug loves this film, Daniel.
Okay, this is actually my first. Wait, what are you doing? Why are you smiling?
I'm just smiling at Doug. I'm gonna make him wait. Because
lots
to say.
Okay. No, this is actually my first movie watching Kirk Douglas and my first movie watching Billy Wilder, or a film by Billy Wilder. So it's it. I mean, I focus on movies past the 2000s, so I'm still plowing through a lot of anything from the 50s, so I think that's fine.
Oh, it's first time on a real event.
Okay. Oh, is it?
Yeah.
First time I get to see it, and I really like this one. I wish they would have shown it when I was doing journalism, just about the ethics of journalism.
What? They probably should have after you were doing that one.
Yeah, because
did they throw you front page then with Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon?
I can't remember. I don't think we watched too many movies, to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or even that one with Robert Redford and...
All the President's Men?
That's the one they should show you. That film was... Perfect.
No, but yeah, no, we didn't watch too many movies, but I would have loved to have watched this during that. I really like this. I really like Kirk Douglas in his role. I love the character of Chuck Tatum, just how he kind of finds his morals eventually. I thought he was a very layered character. I thought manipulative how he just made this all happen, turned into a media circus. And I just thought how that played out was fascinating. Direction is great. I thought it was a great screenplay. I love the dynamic between the guy and the guy who caves in was Leo. I liked the dynamic between Chuck and the wife, and then I liked him talking to him in the cave-in, and I like how he got exclusivity to the story and just how he just was like, I'm going to make a name for myself. I'm going to get at a big publishing house again by any means necessary. So I really like this one. So thanks for putting it on, Doug.
I was going to go next, but I got to let Doug just bust out.
If you want me to. I love this movie. It is so dark. I know Billy Wilder is known for rom-coms, essentially. But even his rom-coms have some dark things in it, like Some Like It Hot has, you know, the Valentine's Day Massacre in it. But we're not talking about Some Like It Hot. We're talking about Ace in the Hole. Mm-hmm. This movie is just – it's so dark. And Kirk Douglas is so brilliant in his role. Like you said, Daniel, he literally turns it into a circus. People are coming from all over to see this man trapped in the hole, in the cave. And he's prolonging it. He's giving advice on maybe you should drill top down. You know, it might take longer, but it'll be safer. Mm-hmm. And then just the ending of this movie, it gutted me. I was not expecting the outcome that happened. And I know Billy Wilder considers himself more of a writer than a director. And when he's directing, it's kind of – he's not really flamboyant in his directing, I will say. But this movie has the one image that has just stuck with me from Billy Wilder films. At the end, when Kirk Douglas comes back to the newspaper and he falls – and when he falls, his face is right there in the camera, perfectly centered, just perfectly filmed. That is Billy Wilder at his most flamboyant directing, and it looked gorgeous. I think this is one of Billy Wilder's most underrated films. He's known for Some Like It Hot, tons of others, The Apartment, whatever, this is probably my favorite Billy Wilder film. I love this movie. I want more people to go out and see it. It's just brilliant. And it's such an indictment of media. And it's 70 years old, and it's just as powerful today.
Wow, I think Doug's pretty much took all my points, but
sorry.
I will hit a few of them. This film is fantastic. I love the shooting. To me, you just don't get this in modern films. They don't get that layered with the black and white. They just don't get that texture. It just doesn't exist in color. You know what I mean? When he goes into the caves and he shoots that, or even when he goes into the diner, just that feel. You know you're in a different place when Wilder shoots. He sets up his settings when the guy's in the office. You get a different feel. And I got to give Wilder credit. When he shoots a scene, it never feels the same to me in any location. He seems to know where to put the camera in every one. Seems to draw out the emotion he needs. And I think Kirk Douglas helps out a lot. He does all the heavy lifting for Wilder here. But Wilder does help him out by giving him good settings. I thought the casting was wonderful. I thought all the characters really had something to do. And I also thought they had different levels, they had different this. And I love... Again, Douglas needs that to work off of because I mean, he's a very – he does the same motions. He's always talking the same, but he's very good. I mean, I think he's probably one of those underrated actors in Hollywood. I mean, we hear from his generation. I mean, you hear a lot of everybody else. Like Jimmy Stewart's probably a little more stronger than he is, but I think Douglas should be right in the same pedestal. And Ace in the Hole proves that to me, that he should be on the same pedestal. But I just don't I – mean, he did Spartacus, for Christ's sake. Like, come on, people. I mean, Passive Glory, but he just somehow gets passed over to me as that great actor. I mean, he's a better actor than Gadsden.
I think he's passed over because that whole thing with Natalie Wood, though, right? That whole controversy?
That was Robert Wagner.
Or I thought there was a lot of controversy around Kirk Douglas.
Am I missing something here, Doug?
I thought it was Robert Wagner and Christopher Walken.
That's right, on the boat.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm wrong.
So I just feel that Douglas, maybe just people, he lasted too long and maybe that was a problem. But I mean, he has some great films. I mean, even though I haven't seen his Picasso film, Bold and Beautiful, I think is one on my list that still I need to watch. I will get to it. But yeah, I'm backing up Doug and everything he says. People, you need to see this film. If you love film, watch this film. That's it. Skip that Space Jam crap with your kids and go watch Ace in the Hole. Make them watch it too. So they might get the Casablanca reference in Space Jam 2 when you put it on later in the night and they go, Dad, this movie sucks. So I did a little thing. I apologize. I did skip the list because I have no intro to this film, but I have a lot to say about it. So I just wanted to do it last. So I was sitting here and hanging out and Doug sent me a film I couldn't pronounce. So, Daniel, can you help me?
Yeah, Rafifi. It's Rafifi, directed by Jules Dassin, written by Auguste Le Breton, Jules Dassin, Rene Reeler, starring Jean Servais, Robert Hoshausen, Magali Noel, Janine Darcy, Robert Manuel, and Mary Sivere.
Okay, I'm going to start because I have lots to say. Thank you, Doug. All I have to say is thank you. I don't give films 10 and often. This is getting a 10. This film is absolutely brilliantly shot. Oh, my God. I felt I was there in every scene. Whoever this director is, I looked him up because I'm going to watch more of his films. Because I felt every time the man went somewhere, I was there. Every character in this film had a motivation to do what they were going to do. Everything made sense to me, from picking him up from prison, meeting his old friends, planning the heist, what happened after the heist, the end of the film, the kidnapping. Everything worked for me. I couldn't believe some of the things they did. But the thing that amazed me most was the shot selections. Absolutely wonderful, especially the outside shooting. Breathtaking shots. I'm like, how did this guy have this vision to shoot like this? Because it really didn't exist. I mean, I would argue that Kubrick saw Path of Glory films a lot like this. When he's shooting those war scenes, I really felt he saw this film and goes, yeah, I can do Path of Glory. Like, I think, I'm not saying he steals it, but I see the same shooting style, those long shots. This lead is wonderful. Absolutely cast to perfection. I thought every single person in the film. I thought the mods were, the women were good. I thought I love the nightclub scene. I would like to actually spend more time in the nightclub, but that's not a fault in the film. It really doesn't need to be there, and maybe there are some scenes that got cut, but I was okay with what they showed me. I think there was another whole film there we could have watched with the night things. I love the end of this film. I thought it was phenomenal. I really did not see what happened coming in any way, and it blew me away. And I still think my favorite scene is the scene when the woman goes to get the guy to give him the money so he can follow him. Brilliant. Absolutely some brilliant writing there. And the whole thing with the nightclub owner, you wouldn't see that now. They goes, he just gave you a fake rock. Don't worry about it. Brilliant again. Like, the writing to me impressed me for this film, because I don't see this filmmaking often from this period. There is some great American films I've seen from this period, but I've never seen a solid French film. Now, I'm not saying this is French New Wave, but this must have influenced the French New Wave directors. I mean, the shot selection of Breathless, I would argue, is very similar to this. So I'm just going to say this film is a perfect 10, fabulous on every level. I'm done.
Doug, did you want to go?
I could talk about this movie for hours, so if you
we
guys
should have our own show, just
if you guys
want
to go before I get into it,
we could break down every scene of this film, and I could have no issues having something discussed about it.
I can go next because it'll be really easy.
Go ahead, Bob.
I didn't see it. I didn't have time.
Yeah, bye. Next.
Okay, I can go. I'd go on that podcast with you guys because I love this as well. I love, like, everything you're saying about the shot selection, like, the way the cinematography is great. I like the heists that are a bit more flashy, but here I didn't mind it. I was just hanging on every word, really, every piece of dialogue.
When they do the heist, and literally you never see in films them actually doing the pre-heist work. Usually they just drop you right in the heist.
Yeah.
But they're showing the cars and showing cars pulling up and how they're going to do it, what time of day they're, they break it down to the, and it's not boring.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the shots are so nice, and just the way the cars work, and the way the guys went into the shop earlier and showed you things that you don't even need to know later, but it pays off later because you were paying attention earlier, especially with the cash machine. The stuff gets dropped in, you see the guy take it out. I'm like, this is, I love it. They paid it off perfectly. And it was a nothing shot if you weren't paying attention.
Sorry, yeah, no, you're fine. And yeah, no, like the everything you're saying, like the whole recon, like the whole, how they have the alarm and they're trying to test what puts it off. That's just brilliant. And then just probably 20, 25 minutes of pure silence.
Hold on. That's the alarm. When they're figuring with the foam and playing with things and testing out the alarm, you don't see that.
Yeah. And
I thought that was brilliant. Like, I was interested in how are they going to stop this alarm? And the thing is, I like them. Like, a lot of heist films, you don't like Fast Nine. It's a heist film mostly.
Yeah.
But these guys, I like. I want to spend more time with them.
Yeah.
And the Fast Nine clowns are going to get run over tomorrow by a steamroller, and I'd be quite happy.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah, and just like how they just arrange it, like the 25 minutes of silence is just very anxious. I like that they don't go in with a gun or anything, so they can't get extra time. I loved all of it, but the umbrella, where like the bit with the umbrella just to catch the dirt, that's when I was like, holy shit, this is a special movie kind of thing, you know? Just, and I was just like, I never would have thought about that. Like, I love how they just seem to, it feels like the writers for these themselves, because of all the stuff that they thought about. And I thought that was great. And everything after, with just obviously like the human element intervening, and with the gangsters and being like, oh, and then like the Caesar, I think, making the mistake is just like, of course he did it, you know? So I just, the pre-heist heist and then everything after, I thought that was great. And I just, yeah, usually in my taste is more flashy in the heists, and I was just totally happy to just go with the flow and just, I think it feels more cinematic because of how it's shot, even though there's not anything that would really happen today that feels like sexy, like in the way that Ocean's 11 is kind of thing. So I just appreciated that, and I just, I love heist films. You
saw this film.
Sorry?
Soderbergh definitely has seen this film.
Oh, for sure. I feel like this must have...
like Ocean. I've watched Ocean's 11, like, you ripped this off, Parchment.
Yeah, I feel like this must have influenced, like, every heist film that came after.
Well, Ray Fiennes feels like the owner of the casino.
Wait, what do you mean? Sorry?
Well, the casino in Ocean's 11 is Ray Fiennes, is it not, if I remember correctly?
Alfred Molina?
Andy Garcia, yes.
I'm saying he's the same guy in this film. Like, they're very similar characters.
Okay, wait, sorry, which character would he have been similar to here?
The guy that runs the entertainment place.
Oh, the gangster? Okay.
Yeah, I feel they're the same guy.
Okay, I can see that, yeah.
I'm not saying Garcia has seen this film, but I would argue has seen this film.
Yeah, maybe just, yeah, I feel like...
Even hit me up at extrafeatures@gmail.com and tell me if you've seen this or not. That'd be great. Thanks. Get back to me.
Yeah. No, but yeah, no, it's like, thank you, Doug, for putting it on, because I probably wouldn't have heard about this. And I'm just going to have to, go through the Criterion website and just take everything from there. Because obviously they have good choices.
I think most times they do, but sometimes I have not liked it. And Kevin likes the Criterion thing. He buys things off.
I do, yeah. Unfortunately, I didn't see this because, I didn't get to it till today. And it's not available for purchase digitally. Otherwise, I would have, yeah. But I did enjoy the trailer, and I thought it reminded me a lot of the Parker novel.
Oh, yeah.
Donald Westlake, that kind of thing. The heist and the planning, and very, it's like, looks like the noirest of noir movies.
It is, but yeah. It's excellent. Excellent.
Kevin and the intern will get together and review the trailer.
Yes. We're going to do movie trailer reviews.
So, this is the time of the show I ask if you bought it.
Oh, Hainer.
I haven't gone yet. I haven't talked. Not yet.
Oh, sorry, my bad.
Actually, I will say what fascinates me about this movie is a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff. Jules Dassin, he might sound like he's French, but he's actually from Connecticut.
What?
Yeah.
Is that the lead?
The director.
Oh, sorry. Oh, okay.
Okay.
And he was actually one of the blacklisted people that Elia Kazan ratted out. So he was blacklisted in Hollywood, and this movie is the first movie he made post-blacklist.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, blacklist.
Jules Dassin plays Caesar in this movie. Caesar is the one who rats out his friends. Caesar is the one who gets shot and killed.
Okay.
That is Jules Dassin basically saying Elia Kazan should be shot and killed for what he did.
Oh, cool.
This movie, they had to take it out of theaters in Mexico because there was a rash of burglaries using the exact same method that was shown in this movie in Mexico City.
Okay, so it worked.
So they had to take the film out of circulation in Mexico. I absolutely love this movie. I think it's brilliant. Like you guys said, I totally saw Soderbergh's Ocean's 11 when they're planning the heist, but you don't actually see the full plan until they actually do the heist. Simon, you were saying you love the way this was shot.
I do.
Another movie Jules Dassin made pre-blacklisting is called The Naked City. It's a noir cop film shot in New York. It's actually shot in the city. It won the Oscar for cinematography that year. That is a brilliant movie that Jules Dassin made before this.
I will watch it.
I would highly recommend that one as well.
It'll be done this week. It's screw that Wes Craven film I had to watch. It's now done.
But yeah, I love this movie. I love everything about it. The film itself, the story behind it, just everything about it. Jules Dassin was destitute. He didn't want to make this movie. It's based on a book. The book is apparently horrible. It has, like, necrophilia in it. It's horribly racist because it's about Africans, people from Northern Africa coming to France to commit crimes. And Jules
Africans are the jewel thief?
Yeah. Well, apparently there isn't even a jewel thief in the book. They just kind of took the title of the book. Jules Dassin hated the book.
I can see why.
Yeah, this is nothing like the movie we watched.
Yeah, so he was so desperate to make a film because he was broke that he's just like, fine, I'll make this movie, but I'm not using the book, essentially. Ooh. He made a brilliant film off of a horrible book.
Ooh.
That's
so he might have, wow. So like him being broke might have helped change, like influence the heist genre. That's great.
Yeah.
I want to read more about this now. Cool.
Okay. I'm good now to move on to our next section. Bob?
I have quite a few for your next section.
I'm introducing the next section, then okay. You're more than welcome to speak. Normally at this point of the section, I ask you if they bought anything. Some people I know did. You're more than welcome to get there in a second. I'm apologizing to our listeners. My pile is in a different room, so I will bring it up in 2 weeks. That is all.
Okay.
Bob?
Okay. New Mutants I bought with a digital copy, actually. I'll Take Your Dead. Something called...
Wait, you'll Take My Dad?
Dead.
My Dad.
Dead. D-E-A-D. Dead.
Oh, okay. Aggressive spelling.
Here. All dead, you are dead.
Oh, okay. Oh, I think I talked with the girl in that movie. Okay.
The door. Let her out. The sublet.
Underneath the door?
Let her out of the door, yes.
Whatever.
So you can take your dad.
Fight. Escape room. The Disney Herbie collection, Don Knotts collection.
Oh, classics.
Star Trek Discovery, which I believe has a... No, it doesn't.
Not classics.
Well, sorry, I bought them. That was my choice.
Anybody else? Doug?
Yeah, I got a bunch of stuff. Starting with this really cool The Green Knight role-playing game from the new movie from A24. So I thought that was pretty cool. And then I got a bunch of movies. I'll start with Without a Clue. Michael Caine, Ben Kingsley as Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
Did we do that one?
Another Sherlock Holmes, The 7% Solution.
I don't know if I've seen that one. I'll check.
Let's see. This is a two-pack Murders in the Rue Morgue and The Dunwich Horror.
I've seen Murder in the Rue Morgue for sure, years ago.
There we go. The Natural on 4K.
You Americans in baseball. I don't understand that film.
This one is called Die in a Gunfight.
Ooh,
this
one
I have seen, and your buddy asked for a review, and I referred him to my Twitter and was very gentle to him.
Yeah, I got this one mostly because my friend, Michael Lipinski, he directed the animated segment
film. Which I do enjoy.
So Michael, I had to get that to support a friend.
Good work on the animators.
Nice. Let's see. I got the Oh God collection on Blu-ray.
Is there only two of those?
Three.
I wonder if I'm sure I've seen them all.
Oh God, you devil.
Yes.
Oh God, you devil.
Crimson Tide, after discussing K-19 last episode, I wanted to watch a good.
Yeah, a good. You did. You saw Jungle Cruise.
Let's see.
I like that.
Sundown, it's about vampires in an old west town.
Oh, cool.
So you got some Levinson, just because I got a Rain Man. It was $5.
You can wait, hold on. You don't go to Walmart, so where'd you buy that?
Amazon.
Diner.
Wait,
you have to go all the way to the Amazon to get that movie?
He did. Yes. He was on Jungle Cruise.
And then I'll just end with a few early Clint Eastwood movies I got. Coogan's Bluff. Two Mules for Sister Sarah, one I've amazing. Never seen. I thought it was a musical. I was getting it confused with, I don't know, Paint Your Wagon.
That is pretty funny.
So I've never seen it. I thought it was a musical.
No, and then, one of my favorites.
The Iger Sanction, another Clint Eastwood early
film. It's so long ago, I don't remember it. Kevin?
So I only bought one movie, and that was one I already had, but I bought the extended cut of Night and Day with Tom Cruise.
Okay.
Gal Gadot.
And Uma Thurman. Gal Gadot isn't in it for like 2 minutes.
Did you buy any hot toys? Maybe we should change this to hot toys.
You can see my, on my screen, you can see the Scout Trooper and speeder bike, complete with Baby Yoda here.
Nice.
Happy guy. I'm just waiting for IG-11 to show up so I can put him on there with the Baby Yoda strapped to his chest.
Dino?
I didn't buy anything.
Good. So before we go, I just want to tell you guys, garage sale season's back, so I have been picking up stuff. So again, I should be back for a regular room next time.
So, you know what you should look for? I heard a great garage sale story yesterday.
Let's hear it.
So someone in the Calgary area found at a garage sale a page from X-Men 109 by John Byrne.
What the hell?
Yeah.
Wow.
They bargained with the guy and they paid $350 for it.
That's worth a few thousand.
Right now it's up for auction, and it's at $35,000.
Yeah, exactly my point.
What?
Mm-hmm.
That's what, 10 times? That's 100 times value.
Yeah, well, I hate those kind of stories because I feel bad for the person that had it and thought that they, you know, were making a ton of money selling it for $350. And so, anyway.
Like, just saving space in your new house, but the page, oh my God. I would be distraught if that was me who sold it.
Yeah.
Okay. If they make it.
If it's a sequel, Bob watches that first.
Only if it's 10th in the series.